This is episode 292 of the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
I think I'm joining you. I mean, you can see me, right?
I can see you now.
Oh, but that's amazing. I feel like we've had an experience trying to start this show today, much like many people have had over the past few weeks as they explore the new normal of video conferencing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fun how that works. You find things that you never even would have thought to be an issue, like where we were right. Talking on camera, and then I just go to screen share with you so we can pick our tiny pieces of Seahawk stuff prize winner
right.
and record it for all prosperity and posterity, or whatever the P word is that is
what,
used
what
for
are
that.
Those words? Yeah.
But yeah. And then as soon as I stopped screen sharing with you, your camera went black. And so we got to troubleshoot that for a while. It's been a journey to get the show started today.
It has, yeah. I faded to black there for a little while, and now I'm back.
You're back.
It's good to be here.
Try so for people that have this issue, try another USB port. That's ultimately what the solution was.
Yeah, because like for whatever reason, the one that I've been using for the past, I don't know, 6 months.
No good anymore.
It doesn't work with that camera no more.
Tired of that
camera.
Yeah,
it's done now. Yeah. Got kicked out.
Yeah. So we are moving on, and this has been a journey. You know, Adam, I took my first journey out into the world with wearing a face covering for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all new things.
I've been doing it. And really, I have the kind of the more respirator looking thing.
Oh, nice.
Because I had them for work.
Like the Marshawn one that he wore warming up?
No, it looks more like I'm painting a car in a booth.
No, that's not
right?
as fun.
Or basically, I'm afraid that I'm going to, you know, have... Yeah, an infection that's like from body snatchers or aliens, you know, something like that. Like something that's really bad is going to get you.
Yeah.
Like it looks pretty serious.
See, I don't really care what it looks like. I'm taking the approach of, is what I'm doing today going to help us have football in the fall or not help us have football in the fall? And I'm defaulting to the one that's going to help us have football in the fall.
Right. I think that's a great mindset. Basically, every time I put it on, I feel like I'm helping institute the 2020 season. Which I'm stoked for because the Seahawks continue making moves here in free agency.
Yeah.
I know they're not giant ones, but some interesting things. I'm excited about our tight end group and what that room is going to be like for all people involved throughout the course of the season. And I'm worried for Greg Olsen's mental stability. You know, just lots of interesting stuff has happened over the last 2 weeks since I talked to you, and I can't wait to get into it.
Oh, we have got a full show, and especially for an off-season show. So, yes, we're going to get there. Some sad news, though, to start the show. And
yeah.
I think we all woke up to this Tuesday morning. Tavares Jackson killed in a single-person car crash, I guess in the early morning hours of Tuesday. And just sad news, man. 36 years old and gone. He was our full-time quarterback in the 2011 season. And then, you know, so many of us know him from all of his outstanding coin tosses and where he came up clutch in those particular moments, got to play in the Super Bowl. One of the few quarterbacks that's actually taken backup quarterback snaps in the Super Bowl because we had such a lead. And just a kind of a guy who had been kind of getting his life back in order and being a coach, a quarterback's coach of a college football team. And then for this to happen is very sad.
It is very sad. What's also very sad is that it took all the way up to his time of death for you to get his name right, as far as how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
But I'm glad that you figured it out.
I figured it out.
Even if it was here at the end.
I want to call him Air Tavares, but it's Tavares Jackson. And I noticed that I'm not the only one to do it, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fair. I still can't say the guy's name that we're not going to ever re-sign, Jadoveon.
I thought you figured it out.
I did, but then I forgot it.
Like, it's been 2 weeks since we did the last show, and now
I know I didn't commit it to like muscle memory.
You gotta work on that.
Yeah, Jadeveon.
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 Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, sad news about T-Jack. That's too early. Not really a ton to say about it, but I hope that he's in a better place. I know he'd been turning his life around, and I hope he had found some peace before then.
Well, let's talk about some of the moves that have been going on recently. You hinted at it a little bit that the Seahawks had been making moves in free agency. Not real big ones, but one of the things that they do. Pete Carroll talked about this at the end of the season, wanting to maintain continuity on the offensive line, and Mike Iupati returning. So they will return four starters on the offensive line as it stands right now. And because I know a lot of people say, oh, well, they're bringing Mike Iupati back. Maybe that means BJ Finney's going to be the center. They let Justin Britt go. I, you and I have been talking about this for a while, and I think this kind of lends to the idea that Pete Carroll wants that continuity on the offensive line, and everybody's coming back except Jermaine Ifedi.
Yeah, you are the weakest link. Goodbye, right, with Ifedi. But, you know, the thing about it is that this is kind of a tacit admission by the organization that they can't draft an offensive lineman for the life of them. And so basically they went up out and loaded up on every guy that has possible upside right. with that they could get in at a pretty bargain basement, you know, price, and still keeping everybody, like you said, except for Ifedi, to bring back some continuity, unless they can be beat out by one of these other guys. They're just, that's the way they decided to gamble on this. They clearly think that they're better at finding pass rushers in the draft than they are at finding offensive linemen.
It would seem that way, although it seems like it's a development curve for the pass rushers that they do draft. And maybe that just speaks to their optimism around guys like Rasheem Green and LJ Collier to move up and have more of an impact this coming year. But they are definitely investing on the offensive line. And with Iupati returning, I think this lends... It leads me to believe that I'm right about this idea of BJ Finney being more of Ethan Posick's replacement than Justin Britt's replacement.
Yeah, I agree with you very much. I don't know, like I said a thousand times on the podcast to this point, I don't know why everybody's in such a rush to get rid of Justin Britt. Probably our best offensive lineman of the last 4 years, 5 years, right? The most consistent.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, Dwayne Brown comes in for a couple of those years.
So, yeah, if you go for a longer period of time, sure.
Yeah. So, and a team leader, one of those guys.
Yeah, a guy Russell Wilson trusts.
Yeah. Yeah. His SAW score is low.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's good.
And that's a plus in the column for Russell Wilson's mental and physical well-being, I think.
I think so. Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't see him getting rid of Britt. We'll see. It's still, I guess, kind of early in the game in a way.
Yeah.
I mean, you got draft coming up and, you know, some time after that. And who knows exactly when the season's even going to start. So it could be an extended off season on top of that.
Yeah. I don't want to think that far ahead. I want to think about it as far ahead to the draft. And, you know, we'll get there when we get there, people.
Yeah. Yeah. The draft will be interesting for the Hawks this year. There's no doubt about it.
Draft's going to be interesting for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, with the video conference. Hopefully they have the right USB port for their cameras.
Well, the good thing is that the draft every single year, these guys work by telephone and making mm-hmm. calls to other general managers using the telephone. And they right. manage to make it work from all these individual locations anyway. So instead of just doing it at their facility, they're doing it at their house.
Right. And the other thing that I found interesting about this is people kind of freaking out about, oh, my gosh, it's going to be a virtual draft. However will we do it? Well, okay, except for the guys on day one, who actually walks out on the stage. Most dudes, they just call you.
Yeah, you're at home, and you get the call.
You're at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you'll have a few less people over.
Right.
Like, this really isn't that big of a deal.
How it comes across on the TV is going to look different.
Sure.
I mean, just as you watch, you know, all these different TV shows where people are broadcasting out of their houses, it looks a lot different.
It looks a lot different. I've noticed Colin Cowherd playing with camera angles as he's set up his at-home studio.
Oh, good for him.
The most recent is just dead nuts straight on. And I don't like it.
No.
I don't like it. Yeah. It feels a little aggressive. I don't like straight on Colin.
A little too much for you.
It's a little too much for you. So, yeah, everybody's got to work through this and get their video conferencing room set up. In fact, I think I'm actually going to clean out the podcast room when we're done with this.
We could do more video, you and I.
Right. And it would be acceptable.
And
right
then
now,
we will look like the professionals.
See, that's where I'm getting at. I was like, well, maybe it's time to do this so that we will be the ones that, like you said, look like the professionals.
I'm going to have to comb my hair, though. I mean,
you can still wear jammy pants.
Well, other news, you know, talking about offensive line, one of the things that we hadn't talked about yet, Adam, after being a couple weeks, one of the pieces of news we found out with regard to the offensive line Jermaine Ifedi's 1-year deal with the Bears, this is from Field Yates, is the for the veteran salary benefit. $137,500 to sign, $910,000 base salary, with a cap number of $887,500.
Yeah. So the Seahawks really didn't want him back.
I think it may have been mutual, but yes. I mean, if they would have doubled his salary, he probably would have come back. And it wouldn't have been that hard to double his salary.
Right. Yeah. So. His new salary is what you're what
his
you're
new salary. Correct.
Yeah. And that's interesting. I mean, everybody had forecasted him getting a big deal somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Like a George Fant type deal.
Yeah. I figured somebody would spend dumb money on it. Right.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he's a starting right tackle.
Yeah, they do it every year.
Da-da-da. Yeah. Not this year.
No.
That's an ego bruise for Ifedi.
That hurts.
He was probably, I'm going to be honest, he's probably a little sick of the 12s in their opinions on his play. I'm sure he wasn't excited to continue a career in Seattle. But hey, man, if they felt like the hard folks of the Pacific Northwest were difficult to deal with, wait till Chicago fan gets a hold of him when he is just false starting left and right.
Well, the good thing is that there aren't those expectations when you go to a new team with you being a first round pick and coming in at a veteran minimum salary. I don't think that it comes with the pressure of being a first round pick. So hopefully it all works out for everybody.
Yeah, maybe. Happy trails to Ifedi. Goodbye.
Nico Thorpe coming back, though. Special teams captain. Good to see him back with the Seahawks. EZ.
Yeah. Easy.
Easy. That's like his tag. He's always saying easy.
Oh, he is?
Ugh, you don't know Nico Thorpe like we fans of Nico Thorpe.
Wow, I guess not.
No, Nico.
I was just, he's not a long snapper, okay? I'm not going to get too excited about a gunner. I think they're, over glorified anyways in compared to the yeoman's work that the long snapper does. And so I'll spend my extra special teams attention on Tyler Ott.
There you go. Malik Turner had his exclusive rights free agent tender withdrawn from the Seahawks, which is a move that they could end up re-signing him, but I think this is just a potential cap-saving move.
Yeah.
Not a lot, but...
If you're going to carry 14 offensive linemen on your roster... For the next couple months, you're going to have to make some room somewhere, I'd imagine.
Deep draft coming up with wide receivers.
Yeah, that's what they say. I mean, and with all the spread offenses out there, I could see that as a distinct possibility. I mean, as I sat and watched quarterbacks, you saw a lot of receivers that you're like, oh, okay, that guy can play a little bit. But I'm not as good at evaluating the receivers, that's for sure.
Yeah, can catch, cannot catch.
Right. Seems fast. Maybe doesn't seem fast. I don't know. I still, to this day, I have yet to have the definition of a great route explained to me. Like what goes into that?
Yeah. It's like the origin of the term gunner. It's these mysteries that we'll probably just never know.
And that's fine. I'll get over it, but I'm just saying.
It is nice, though, to be seeing the Seahawks offseason plan work out to maybe something that you were picking up on a couple seasons ago when John Schneider is finally coming around. And R. Weber 55 was quick to point this out on Twitter, says, I think John Schneider listened to one of your guys' podcasts from a couple years back when Adam wanted to bring in a ton of offensive linemen to compete. I think Adam will be working for a front office soon.
Hey, I like the sentiment. And the funny thing is that's the second time I've been told that in the last week and a half. Which I don't know if people are just losing their minds being like quarantined or if the real sense and logic is like pouring through here at this point. Yeah, I think I should work in the front office.
Yeah.
I think I might take you up on going to the scout school.
Okay.
Something
that we've talked about.
I've been convinced. Yeah, I think it's time. And just so I can make sure that I know how to make up the terms to describe a guy like long levers and things like that.
Yeah, you'll be on the inside then.
Right. And I'll know the process for that. And then I'll be able to write it into a report that people, like to see. And it'll be a lot of fun.
Okay.
And hey, then I'll be on the inside and I'll be able to bring you a lot more breaking information from inside the clink. And yeah, it'll be great. What could go wrong? It's kind of like how John Schneider has done with these offensive linemen. He just brought in a crap ton of them. And what could go wrong?
Yeah. They'll figure it out in training camp.
Yeah, absolutely. It will be the most interesting position group going throughout the offseason here. Just seeing who rises and falls and all that stuff. I mean, they bring back Iupati, but I think there's a legit shot that Chance Womack can beat him out at guard.
Sure. Except he's going to be competing for DJ Fluker's spot, but yeah.
He is not. We went over this.
This is an area of disagreement.
He won't be competing for anything, okay, with DJ Fluker.
But it does kind of make you, it leads us into this conversation, Adam, of the Seahawks draft needs, because now I feel like they've loaded up on guys at center, guys at guard, and it really seems to me that they aren't going to be looking in those positions coming up in the draft here in just a little bit, about a week, I guess, by the time this comes out and folks are listening to it. It'll be 1 week until we're going to be watching the NFL draft.
Well, so this is where things kind of get interesting in the sense of I've been trying this offseason to kind of figure out, all right, where does John Schneider and Pete Carroll think the team is now? And which way do they need to go to compete further along in the playoffs? And is that taking resources and making sure you beef the defense back up? Or are you going all in on your high-paid quarterback and just being like, fine, we're just going to be an offensive team and we'll just piecemeal whatever with the defense as best we can, but we're going to put the majority of our resources into the offensive side of the ball. And it kind of feels that way right now when you look at all of the acquisitions here so far in free agency.
It does. And even when you look at how the Seahawks salary cap has been shaping up in terms of offensive spending versus defensive spending, it is much higher on the offensive side of the ball. You go to over the cap and offense spending right now is at $115 million versus the defense is $72 million. And when Russell Wilson was on his rookie contract, it was much more over to the defensive side. And now, yes, you do still have to pay a few guys on the defense. Bobby Wagner comes to mind. I still think they're going to pay a pass rusher, whether it's Clowney, whether it's Everson Griffin. They're going to find a guy, whether it's a guy that they end up trading for. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that they're going to end up paying, and they're paying Jaron Reed on the defensive line too. So
right.
They have their guys that they are paying on the defense. It's just when you look at the big contracts, it's definitely skewed more toward the offense now.
Yeah, it definitely feels that way. So then for the draft upcoming, how do you see that affecting the draft? And I guess, I mean, would you be stunned if you saw them take another running back relatively high, another receiver or two relatively high, maybe even a tight end?
And it wouldn't bother me if they went offense early, because I think what I want to see from the Seahawks is where they can find impact players. And if you find a guy who's going to provide the most impact to the team at the end of the first round, and it's a guy on offense, because on the defensive line, unless you're going interior defensive line at the at the back end of the first round, and let's be honest, it's going to be the first part of the second round when they make their first pick.
Right.
As long as it's going to be an impact player, I think that's where they should look. If it's a receiver, if it's a tight end, if it's a running back, I think I'll be okay with it if I can look at it and say, yeah, that player has a legit shot to being an impact player. But one of my questions is too, is with the offseason program being different, Adam, is that how many of these guys are going to come in and being able to, you know, unless you pick a guy like who has maybe that pedigree of knowing what it takes to be an NFL type player, like a lot like DK Metcalf. You know, his dad, Terrence Metcalf, in the NFL, he knew what it would take. And so maybe they're looking at guys like Michael Pittman Jr., like Antoine Winfield Jr., of guys who know what it takes to prepare to be ready for the NFL season.
Maybe guys with lower ceilings, but more consistency in kind of NFL level play. I mean, unless you're a guy that's kind of a slam dunk like Chase Young. I mean, he's
right.
The little bit I watched of him, I mean, that guy's a monster.
Chase Young, Isaiah Simmons, you know, the guys that can come in and then they look. Yeah, when they are playing against college competition, they look like they're playing with high school players.
Right. They look NFL ready.
Yeah.
And sure, then maybe you kind of lean towards being more NFL ready, but then again, you're kind of trading that with potential upside because usually those guys aren't the most talented. They're the kind of the more grinder type and have gotten there through hard work and their smarts, which that can play too. It's just, it'll be interesting very much to see which way they go here. And I couldn't have less of a clue this year. This is definitely out of every year we've done the podcast going into the draft. And I know I've been befuddled before by this whole process and am not somebody who really loves the mock draft thing and being able to, you know, predict all that stuff. But I am lost when it comes to what John Schneider is going to do this year, other than he's going to trade down in the first round.
Well, here's what I would say for John Schneider is to go where the value takes you, because there may be teams who look at the NFL draft and say, hey, we didn't get the pro days. We didn't get all of the lead up to it where we get to see the guys on the field and evaluate. So other teams might be saying, hey, we want to trade back and get as many picks as possible. That way we can bring in a bunch of different guys that we liked and wanted to look at through the process and evaluate them, and then maybe cut them during the training camp process. You know, but they just want to load up on guys that they really like. But in that, if there's too many teams doing that, the value might be there then to trade up and get fewer guys and then have guys who maybe, you know, have that kind of work ethic that, you know, can come in and be impact players right away. So I could see teams, you know, trying to maybe consolidate and go with, you know, guys that they think are surefire NFL caliber type players, and other teams maybe going the other way and trying to accumulate and then do the narrowing down process in training camp.
Yeah, that's a definite possibility. One of the things to think about too is, let's take LJ Collier, for example, this last year. He has that bad ankle injury early on through the offseason, right? And was so far behind because he didn't get that time to really figure out the NFL game and to practice and be coached up and all that stuff, that he never cracked the lineup really throughout the end of the season. I mean, I know he played a few snaps and all that, but he was not a significant factor in their rotation. Now, with the possibility that you don't get that time in the offseason with all these young guys, maybe you draft a bunch of projects and then you just basically sit them for a year because you're like, look, whoever I'm going to draft anyways isn't going to be able to play because they're going to miss out on all this stuff.
Right.
So we'll just get projects and you stash, like you said, accumulate guys, but then stash as many on the practice squad as you can and try to build them up throughout that the course of that season, and then maybe in 2021 they're ready to go.
And the benefit is too, is rosters are expanding this offseason, so
right,
you can maybe have a few more guys on the active roster that you wouldn't normally have, and maybe with all this going on, maybe that could maybe teams could decide to increase the roster size even more in this offseason.
Yeah, I would imagine there's going to be some new creative rules put in place for this season to deal with all of this.
Yeah. Well, it is going to be something to watch next week, and I'm excited to see how this is going to go. What other sports do we have to tune into? And now we have the draft coming up next week, and it's going to give us something.
It's going to give us something, and I need it because I realized I was so sports deprived that I literally found myself watching Chauncey Billups in his driveway over FaceTime play horse with Trey Young in his driveway over FaceTime broadcast on ESPN. That's what I was doing. That I did that for about 10-15 minutes.
ESPN. It's there for us.
Yeah, but we need something, so the draft will definitely help with that. Will give us some new things to talk about, that's for sure. We can only comment on Russell Wilson's social media presence so many times.
Having a boy. Having a boy, Adam.
Yep, it's a boy, and that's great. Happy for him.
Yeah.
A few less videos right now would be cool.
Few less?
Yeah.
Okay, if we cut down on that, then can we increase the tight end room conference videos?
Yes. Yes. Except for the only reason I'd say no is for Greg Olsen's sanity. That was interesting. If none of you have, or if there's any of you that have not seen this, the tight ends got together on a Zoom call. Were they on Zoom?
Yeah.
Okay. And
one of those conferencing apps, and you know.
Yep. So Uncle Will, Greg Olsen, Jacob Hollister, and Luke Wilson was on there. And it was entertaining, disappointing, and
bro-y. A nice way to say it would be there's some generational differences between Greg Olsen and Luke Wilson. And because immediately when Greg comes on the call, he wants to know from these young guys what the culture of the tight end room is like.
What kind of culture we got? What kind of atmosphere in that room?
I mean, I don't want to be ignorant, but I think it's pretty solid.
Yeah. Ton of energy, you know? That's what we bring.
High energy.
Energy seems high, and I'm all about high energy, so I'm good with that.
A lot of bromance.
A lot of bromance.
I'm just a bunch of dudes being dudes, man. I'm all for that.
So there's a little bit of the intro, but then
they ponder the important questions of life while they are hanging out in the tight end room.
Okay, but I do have something we've already discussed this, Greg. This is for you, okay? And I'm just going to warn you, we've already talked about this, right? There's kind of a wave, but I'll just go to the final wave, the final two waves. How many people, you get to pick them, would it take? How many people would you get to pick them? Would it take to kill a silverback gorilla? No weapon. And if one person survives, that's considered a win.
This is what you guys talk about?
All the time. We had a week-long debate on this.
There you go. This is what our tight ends talk about.
Yeah, and it was in that moment that I could see it like wash over Greg Olsen's face of, oh my God.
Yeah.
This cannot be happening. I'm going to have to find a different room to hang out in than with these jokers. And the thing is I'm a little disappointed in Will Dissly. He did not bring the Montana to the conversation. Like, kind of like just regular dude.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Or even the common sense thing, because we got to hear Luke Wilson introduce a question that Will Dissly should be able to answer just off the top of his head, and I didn't hear the response that I wanted from Will Dissly.
Do you think that a grizzly bear could kill a silverback ape?
You know, it's funny. My kid reads these books, and it's like Battle of the Insects, Battle of the Water Animals, Reptiles, and whatever. And every book has a category. And they do. You should read it. You should read my kids' third grade books because they all. No, I'm being serious because they all come to a conclusion of who would win.
Outstanding answer from Greg Olsen, though, just to navigate in another direction. But also, I think the passive aggressiveness that I think will fit the Pacific Northwest well, essentially saying that Luke Wilson has the intellect of a third grader.
He's not wrong. He's not wrong. And the thing is that this was a interesting insight to these guys, and they were everything that I thought they were. I mean, short of Dissly, because, yeah. I mean, Brandon, who wins in a grizzly bear, silverback gorilla?
Yeah, it's a grizzly bear, and it's not even close.
Right. Yeah.
Before Greg had a chance to even answer and bring up the idea about the books,
yeah,
Will should have been in there saying as much. That a right. grizzly versus a, yeah, okay, the gorilla may have a strength differential that's greater than a grizzly, but grizzly not only has the size differential, it brings to the fight something that a gorilla, unless you arm the gorilla also with Freddy Krueger claws on each of its hands,
right?
That it's not even fair.
It's not even close to fair. It doesn't make a lick of sense. Will didn't jump in there. I'm also disappointed in Will for not being in Montana during all this.
Yeah, down like, to Huntington Beach.
You be. Yeah, you're in freaking Southern California. Not bright. Not bright. And then on top of all that, I did feel good about Greg Olsen getting that third grade dig in there. That felt right to me.
Yeah.
And then on top of all of that, I got to hear what I'm sure every other college girl that Jacob Hollister ever ran across would got to hear during his time there. And that was him breaking out the guitar. And no the surprise there that he's a guitar guy.
Musical stylings of Jacob Hollister, everybody. But the one thing that was good here is that Greg Olson doesn't like wasting time.
This is riveting stuff.
Yeah. But don't worry, we get our work done. See, the thing is, we never get let out early in our meetings. Meetings go till 5, we go till 5:15, even if we're done at 4:45. You feel me?
Feel me?
I hate wasting time.
Oh, these aren't wasted time, right? You'll just learn to embrace these conversations, man.
Maybe. It helps you think outside the box, man. When you're out on the field, it's going to completely change your game. We're gonna up you to an even higher level.
See, Will Disley, you hear jumping in at the end there. He's been brainwashed by Hollister and Wilson. I think we need to be concerned, and I'm hoping that Greg Olson's presence pulls the what we need from Will Disley back into, you know, what he needs to become great.
Just the years of maturity have been upped in that room by about 45. Because even those guys are just in their 20s, except for Luke Wilson, who is, what, 31, 30? He's not even that far away from Greg Olson in age. And yet, like, I was very concerned about Luke Wilson's
I think they went around ability. The room and said their ages. And when Luke said he was in his 30s, I think.
My favorite part of that is one of them says, oh, you'll learn to really like these conversations. And Greg just slips in a quick, maybe.
Maybe. You didn't just hear me when I said I don't like wasting time, right?
Right.
Yeah, I wonder who's going to win out there.
I think I know who's going to win out there.
At least I have my hopes. All right. Who's going to win out among the rookie quarterbacks, Adam? Because this is something that we do on an annual basis. You rank the quarterbacks, and I have PFF's top 10 ranking. And so I'm kind of curious. I don't know if you went all the way to 10, but
no.
I know you've taking a look at a lot of these guys. And so I'm hoping that at least, what, the top 6, 7?
There's basically, let's see, 4 guys that are worth a note, and then the rest of them are kind of just dudes.
Okay.
So it's not, in my opinion, there's not a lot of great prospects in this draft. And in fact, I find it interesting that every year they kind of hype up an incoming quarterbacks class is if every one of these dudes is going to be a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, like it's 1984 all over again.
Yeah, and the comps are just ridiculous, you know, and it's like, well, wait a second.
Or 83. Maybe. Was 83 the year with Elway and Marino?
Yeah, 83, yeah. And it's just, look, every year you're not going to get 3 or 4 Pro Bowlers out of the draft. You're just not. And I really believe that in this year's draft, even the best guy is going to be about a mid-tier starter at best.
Hmm.
Like when it's all said and done. So yeah. I don't know. Who do you want me to start with?
Well, the number one guy is obvious, I think, to everybody.
Yeah, it's obvious in the sense with Joe Burrow, right? LSU.
Yeah.
You turn on his game and you're like, wow, okay. Does all the things. Very accurate, smart, mobile enough. Arm strength is okay. Smart decisions. It's taken him a long time to figure it out. Kind of needed a perfect situation for it to go well for him. And I mean, I don't dislike Joe Burrow in his game. I don't love it either. It's kind of one of those things where you're like, okay, you can kind of do all the things. You're a serviceable guy. To me, at the end of the day, he's like Alex Smith. I think that's about who he is. Somebody who, at the peak of their powers in a good situation, can be a playoff quarterback, but he's not necessarily going to win you playoff games. He could steward, you know, he could be the steward of a ship that's going through the playoffs, but he's not going to win you games all by himself.
Well, and the other guy, it seems that everybody's kind of enamored with and is probably the next best option that everybody kind of agrees on. And you were kind of down on him a little bit ago, but I feel like based on some of our discussions, you've turned around a little bit with regard to Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah, with Tua, he's not my second best prospect in this draft.
Oh.
I mean, I guess it just depends on what you're going for, but I mean, everybody's talked about the injury history 1,000 times. I mean, clearly that's concerning, but you don't know anything really about how that's going to pan out for his professional career. I mean, Adrian Peterson was injured a lot in college and then played running back in the NFL and was remarkably healthy. And even when he did blow out a knee, he was back in an instant. So it's not always something that, you know, transfers from the college game to the NFL game, your injury history. But a lot of people, it's interesting, compare him to Russell Wilson, right? Not the tallest guy, you know, maybe not the fastest. And Tua's not as fast as Russ. He's just not. And he's not as elusive either.
But a guy that when the play breaks down, he can keep things alive.
He can run around a little bit, and that's fine. Most of his, like, going back, and if you look at the first year that he played a lot and then last year, first year was a little more impressive. He moved around a little bit and ad-libbed a little bit more and kind of kept the play alive. Last year was just a lot of first-read slants, just first-read stuff, and they're wide open. And it's just, it's not impressive. His arm strength is not impressive. His mobility is not particularly impressive. He's fine. I think he's going to be a lower tier starter slash one of the best backups in the league. To me, his game looks the most to me like Tyrod Taylor.
Okay. Yeah. A guy who's been around and can do things.
Yeah. Can stick in the league. He can do some things, but it'll be a fringy starter, right? But sure. I wouldn't.
Not somebody that you're going to hitch your wagon to as a franchise savior.
No, definitely not. Definitely not.
Any franchise saviors that you see?
There's only one potential one, and he's my number two pick, but he's not what everybody's comparing him to. And that, to me, is Jordan Love.
Okay.
You watch him play, and he easily, by far, and it's not even close, has the most arm talent out of all these guys. He can make every throw on the field, and when I say that, it's not just, well, he can throw an out, but he can throw an out with touch if he needs to. He can rope one down the seam if he needs one. He's got touch to his backs. He can feather and layer throws into different windows. He's got all the off-speed stuff, and he's got a cannon. He moves real well. His decision-making this last year was not amazing. Yeah. And a lot of that, to me, was he played with some pretty poor talent. I think his first-year coach was a little over his head. I don't think the offense suited him well. And a lot of those picks were just first-read bubble screens that he's basically instructed to take the snap and throw. Don't, you know, as long as the DB looks like he's off, you take the ball and you throw it. And that's what he's coached to do. And so he does it. You know, first couple times, that's fine. But when you do it seven times in a game, when you call that play seven times in a game, eventually the corner is going to bait you if he's worth, you know, anything. Mm-hmm. And he's going to pick you off. And that happened to him a lot. A lot of some of his other picks, like the LSU game, he threw a couple picks and they weren't great, but we're towards the end of the game. They weren't keeping up with the eventual national champions. And he was just trying to make a play.
Sure.
I hear a lot of people compare him to Patrick Mahomes, and no, but he is similar to Patrick Mahomes in the sense that he needs the right situation. If he goes to the wrong situation, it's going to be real tough for him. He needs to be coached up. And with Mahomes going to Andy Reid, a quarterback guru, that was great for him. I mean, Gruden would be a decent fit, to be honest. Whoever you think is a great quarterback coach, then that's what he needs. I still wouldn't take him in the upper first round. I mean, maybe I'd take him in the lower first or second round.
So you're saying he's going to fall to the Patriots?
I mean, he could. To me, his best comp, Jordan Love, is Jay Cutler with a better attitude. He's kind of a chucker.
Okay.
But has all the skills, right? I mean, Jay Cutler was a franchise guy for a number of years. He had a couple really phenomenal years.
Yeah, and if he had a better attitude, imagine the type of player he could be.
And I don't even think it was an attitude problem with Cutler. For the most part, it was just his footwork.
Sure.
And he just didn't make good decisions. He'd play this amazing game, and all of a sudden he'd have that one throw where you're like, where in the hell did that decision come from? That's Jordan Love a little bit.
Have you seen the buzz this week that's been around Georgia quarterback Jake Fromm?
No, I hadn't heard that there was
buzz. There's buzz now after his interviews.
Okay, neat. That guy is a career backup at best.
Okay.
he had the arm strength is just not there. And he is not a great decision. I'm not big on Jake Fromm at all. No, thank you.
You know, it was funny. One of these other guys that we talked about, too, in the past couple of weeks, Justin Herbert out of Oregon. And I remember thinking, especially after the Senior Bowl, because and he's had that ability to go and be one of these quarterbacks that actually played well at the Senior Bowl. And he was in for at least one drive and he marched him down the field.
Played well, making first read 5 yard throws.
Then that was the thing. That was, you know, when I mentioned that to you, I just remember having this recollection of him having a pretty good Senior Bowl. And then you went and watched it. And then I went and watched it back. And yeah, it was kind of short throws where he dropped back, throw to the schemed open guy, and it worked out well for him.
Yeah, it worked out well for him. It looked a lot like his Oregon film. Man, that dude locks onto a guy, and that's it. There's no going through the progressions. There's no improvisation. It's just whoever he's told he's supposed to throw it to, that's where he's going, and he'll never take a tiny bit off the throw if it makes it more catchable. He'll just gun it every time as hard as he can. I can't stand Justin Herbert. I would. There's no way I would draft that guy, especially high. I mean, I'd draft him maybe in like the fourth round.
Sure.
But the decision making skills are not there.
That would be fine for to have that kind of quarterback as your backup quarterback.
Yeah,
is fine.
He's a backup guy. But I just. That Oregon offense is trash. That is utter trash. It is so annoying to watch.
Really?
Just, oh my God. Just all the, it's all that gimmicky college bullshit.
Catfish!
That if you don't like college football,
yeah.
Like that was, it's on full display there.
That bothers you.
Oh, I hate it. And then every so often, he'll make one of those wow throws.
Yeah.
But the rest of it is just,
yeah, if you go and watch the Herbert highlight tape, it's impressive.
Yeah.
Because it's all the wow throws.
It's all the wow throws. And so that's what I do when I go through these guys. I'll pick 5 games from their most recent season
mm-hmm.
and find a YouTube clip that has every time they drop back to pass.
Yeah.
Every time. And you can watch it back to back to back to back. And you get a better sense of guys. But yeah, for me, I would go Burrow, Love, Tua, and then I guess Herbert. I mean, you might pick Eason. He can't move like Herbert does, but he's got a cannon. I don't know. He's kind of a dying breed of a quarterback. I don't know how he works. Is there anybody else that like popped out? Because really, everybody else that I started to look at after that, I was just like, eh.
Who would you take between Herbert and Jalen Hurts?
Herbert.
Okay.
Jalen Hurts is not a quarterback.
He's gonna find somebody to take him early, though. I think he has the charisma to go higher. I think he's going to charm some people with the whole draft, with this whole process being a lot of Skype calls. I bet his personality is going to come through in interviews.
Yeah, great.
I'm telling you the reality. I know you don't like it, but it's going to happen.
Well, all right, then draft another Oklahoma quarterback who's overrated and has built their entire career around a cult of personality and tell me how that works out for you.
I'm telling you.
Baker Mayfield.
Early round 2, either Carolina or the Chargers, I bet. That's where my bet is. We'll see if I'm right.
If you want to take a flyer in the second round, that's fine. I guess I look at a lot of this as like, hey, am I taking him in the first round and could he be my everyday starter with some certainty? And really there's really only one guy I feel that way about, and that's Burrow. I think Love has that chance, but again, situation is key for him. And then Tua, I think his ceiling is a fringe starter, and Herbert is a career backup for the 3 years he decides he wants to play in the NFL and goes on and does something different.
Well, you mentioned the one Washington quarterback, Jacob Eason. What about Anthony Gordon? Did you watch any of him?
Is he a Washington quarterback?
Washington State.
Oh, no.
Okay.
No. Hey, let me know when Mike Leach is no longer the coach at Washington State, and then I'll take Washington State quarterbacks seriously. And I know Gardner Minshew had himself a nice little season last year, but a mustache can only win you so many games. And I think he's going to have a rougher go next year.
Would it shock you if Jacksonville took a quarterback?
No.
I know a lot of people saying that Tua could maybe end up as a Jacksonville competition.
Great. I wouldn't go out on a limb for a lot of these guys this year. This is just not a quarterback year. I mean, look, if Trevor Lawrence is in this draft, you trade everything you can get to take him number one. He has everything. And he could still be a bust.
So if you're a bad team, build elsewhere.
Build elsewhere. There's better players at different positions in this draft. It's not a great QB draft.
Well, since we are talking draft, we had a comment come in from Jerv Reed. Says, happy birthday, Adam. And we talked about it on the last show. Glad you're finally on the Clyde Edwards-Helaire train. Oh, but it's more than him. We only have one healthy running back on the roster. Carson may be ready by training camp, but he's going into a contract year. Are we really sure we are going to give him an extension? Penny's coming off ACL surgery. Even if he's 100% healed, he isn't going to be ready for week one, and he's definitely not going to be able to burst or cut on that leg till next season. Beast Mode and Turbo are retired. Pro Size is gone. All we have is Homer, who is a good running back. We cannot rely on him being an every down back. Jonathan Taylor and Clyde Edwards-Helaire should be on our list if they fall in the draft to us, as well as drafting 1-2 later on. Our offense is based on our running backs being good enough to compensate for our weak offensive line. All the good pass rushers are probably going to be gone by the time we select, but trust in John Schneider and Pete Carroll will be fine. Go Hawks, from Jerv.
Hey, go Hawks, man. No, that was a solid comment. The thing that I think that he puts into perspective really well is the idea that, okay, fine, you got Carson and Penny this year, great. And they're all confident in that, but are you really giving Chris Carson an extension? I mean, there's no effing way.
Right.
I don't care. I love Chris Carson. I would love to keep him on the team if you could sign him for what a running back is worth these days, but...
Is Melvin Gordon money kind of in the window that you're thinking of, or is that even too high for you?
With his injury history, it's just too high for me.
Yeah.
If he could stay healthier... Then Melvin Gordon range, I'd pay.
Yeah, that's true. Melvin Gordon has managed to stay more healthy, I think, than Carson.
Oh, you know who else Melvin Gordon's been healthier than? Todd freaking Gurley, okay?
Right.
They came out in the same draft, and I remember us getting on ESPN Radio in Spokane and saying that the Rams were stupid for picking Gurley and that Gordon would be the more productive player over the course of his career because of the injuries, and I got laughed at.
Yeah, well, there's still time for that to play out, right?
Oh, it's already happened. Gurley will be out of the league by the end of the year next year.
And then Gordon will go on to have a full career.
Two or three more years of quality play.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be mad if they drafted a back, right? I mean, just based on that?
Well, and that's what how I was talking about earlier about finding an impact player. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, to me, is an impact player. And if he's there at the end of the first round or... Gosh, you see talk of some of these guys even falling to the end of the second round. Mm. At that case, it's a no-brainer because if the position has been devalued to a point to where you can get a guy who can come in and impact your team, especially with the way that you build your offense, kind of like Jerv was getting to in his comment, if that's how your team is built and that player can have a significant impact, then you got to take him.
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, that'd be basically your DK Metcalf of the draft, right? Guy that has more talent than where he's drafted at. I haven't watched anything of the Taylor kid. I know people say he's the best back in the draft, but I haven't watched any of it.
I know a lot of people kind of compare him to maybe a lesser version of Zeke Elliott type of running back.
All right.
But Edwards-Helaire having more of the pass catching ability and
more
of the wiggle.
Yeah, I like the versatility.
I like running
vision.
Back wiggle. I'm high on the wiggle scale.
I like wiggle to a degree. I also want you to put the damn foot in the ground and make a cut. And he does that well. He's good with the jump cut, making one cut go. He's got good vision. I like that too. Somebody had posted an article saying that the Florida State running back would be somebody that they should kind of look at. And you would hate him if you're all about the wiggle.
You would. He is very much, to me, he is the same guy as Rashad Penny. Very similar.
He is slower.
Yeah. Probably a slower version of Rashad Penny, but I feel like, much like Penny, he needs the open space.
Yeah.
But he had a terrible offensive line, too. So I have a hard time. Cam Akers he's a guy that I have trouble with.
I watched a few of his games and just When I'm looking at running backs, I'm always looking to see, okay, what do they do when things get cluttered? They're not going to break out a nice run every time that, you know, the hole closes up on them and the O lineman whiffs and all that stuff. Or do they even just get back to the line of scrimmage? Like, do they make positive runs out of that on the regular? Like, what does that look like? Because, you know, things get screwed up more often than they go just right.
Yeah. And that's why Zach Moss, I think, fits out of Utah and kind of a mid round guy that I think fits what you're talking about with that regard. Whereas I didn't see that so much from Cam
at all. No. Yeah. I mean, he did it a couple times, but most of his, especially if you look at in with the problem with the running backs, a lot of times is all you can find is the highlights, right? You can't get.
Oh, Cam Akers' highlights are amazing. It's him running in the open field and
in the wide open field. Yeah. Right. I'll have to look at the Moss kid. I haven't looked at that at all.
Yeah, look at Zach Moss from Utah. I think you'll like him.
Okay.
I did a mock draft on field goals here with Nathan Santo of the Seahawks Nest. Oh. And he had quite a few guys that he was really pitching me on in terms of running backs and even guys that could go even later in the draft. And you know, that's one of the things that we kind of need to remind ourselves too of. He likes Rico Dowdle out of South Carolina, James Robinson, if you go a division down, Illinois State, as a guy who just ran all over the competition there. So I think they can find some guys.
Well, yeah, Chris Carson was a seventh round. Yeah. I mean, so it happens. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are, you know, kind of lost in the shuffle of the draft because of the running back position. I mean, shoot, they could still bring in a free agent or two. I mean, you heard rumors about Alex Collins being brought in for a workout.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be interested. I'd like to see.
It's worth a shot. I mean,
hey, he had some success in Baltimore.
Yeah.
Some people talking about another beast mode reunion.
Sure.
For a few carries. I kind of like it. I think he's good for the team.
It's a position that I could see them addressing early, but they don't have to address early. And still find a guy who could come in and be the next Chris Carson.
So,
or a step up from Chris Carson, considering, especially when you think back to last season, all the fumbling.
Yeah, the fumbling was a major issue. With Jarrett's comment, he talked a little bit about Procise being gone. Are we sure? Because he's, I always feel like he's either gone, about to be gone, should be gone, but yet is always still there.
He could come back. So is anybody else going to be looking for him?
Was his contract up this last year?
Yeah.
Okay. See, that's what I was unclear on.
Yeah, it was the final year of his contract.
God, that was so frustrating. I mean, just, man, talk about health issues. I mean, just all the talent in the world. His stuff from Notre Dame looked cool. I was pretty amped up about him.
Never able to quite put it together, so.
Nope.
All right, Adam. Well, what do you say we take a quick break? And after the break, we'll get into the second half of the show. I have some good second half of show material, thanks to Devin in Hollywood and some commentary on Pete Carroll on the Mysterious Universe podcast. I'm excited to get into this.
All right. Sounds good, man.
Getting into the second half of the show, going to be giving away our tiny pieces of Seahawks stuff. We're going to be announcing the winner for that. Also, the next, we got to do this again. Based on all the comments that we got this last time, keep that rolling through the offseason, especially since we've had so many people stick with us, Adam, at gettingtheflock.com. I'm incredibly humbled by the fact that even in what could be tough times for some people, the flock is going strong.
They really are. And nobody really bailing for this time period here, which is quite remarkable. It'd be very easy to look through your expenditures right now. Especially if you're a little less than employed, like most of us are,
right?
And have a donation to the Seahawkers podcast be the thing that maybe gets axed.
And it's happened, and I did, and you know, totally understood.
Absolutely, I'm just surprised it didn't go to zero, and I'm floored.
Very happy that we can be here and give something else for folks to listen to, especially when there's more newsy things that you could be listening to. And maybe hopefully this is a little bit of an escape from that, even though we have to touch on it from time to time with it being such a big thing in the world right now. But yeah, it gives us an opportunity to get away from it sometimes and enjoy some of the stuff that's still going on in terms of Seahawks news.
Absolutely.
I mean, it would be tough to be a basketball podcast right now.
Would it be any more so?
You just treat it like the offseason, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know that it is any more difficult, except for the fact that the NBA players are really good at the social mediaing in terms of getting out in front of people and, you know, still providing entertainment. I mean, really, the NBA has been leaps and bounds above everybody else with that.
Yeah, you don't see the hockey players getting out there and playing the hockey version of Horace in their driveway.
No, they're all holed up in Canada drinking some Molson.
Well, one of the things that's been entertaining to me is something that Devin in Hollywood pointed out. And this podcast comes from, it's a Mysterious Universe podcast. And I think it was produced back in during the season, the football season, probably back around November timeframe. And I like it when our listeners, you know, especially you know, listening to all kinds of podcasts, there's no way that we can catch even all the Seahawks content out there that's on all the podcasts. Pete Carroll and Steve Kerr started up a podcast here this week that that they get to talking some coaching stuff that I've been meaning to go and listen to. So there's just so much to get to. So I like it when our listeners can say, hey, here's a corner of the podcast world that talked about some Seahawks stuff. Maybe you should check it out. And so Devin in Hollywood, he emailed back in after we mentioned it a couple weeks back, says, hey, guys, thanks for reading my email regarding the Mysterious Universe podcast. I didn't mention it because I thought it was in the description, but there is a segment about Pete Carroll, how he studied some you know, supernatural type stuff at University of Pacific, how it influenced his coaching, and even how it influenced the design of the VMAC. And he says, enjoy, thanks again, and go Hawks. And yeah, I went through this, Adam, and I pulled out some clips that I think were my favorite clips from this discussion around Pete Carroll and where it originated from. And gosh, maybe we can track down the author that they pulled this from. There's a guy named Ed Hawkins, who's a journalist and wrote a book called The Men on Magic Carpets. And the tagline is the bizarre true story about the cosmic side of sport.
Huh? Okay.
And so that's where this comes from. And this is where the conversation starts with regard to our Seahawks head coach.
Now, to explain this, we go back to 1975 briefly. There was a University of the Pacific, which is this university in California. They were having this class called Sports and Cosmic Forces, The Inner Game. And Glenn Alba was the teacher. And essentially in this class, they were trying to understand why people performed higher levels than others. It was serious stuff, he said. And a member of that class was this guy named Pete. And Pete was really curious, Glenn told Ed. He was looking for people who could levitate. He really was. There are people who have that connection, and I believe it, he said. He also thought he was a channel. And Ed's like, what do you mean by channel, Glenn? What was he channeling? And he says, oh, you know, communication on a cosmic level. I think Murphy feels that within Pete, there's a special connection that only the occult can recognize. And Ed heard this and he thought, special communication that only the occult can recognize? He had like chills. Like, who is this guy? And for NFL fans, you will know this guy. Pete Carroll is this guy.
And so I had to edit it out a little bit when I was listening to it because they took some diversions from the original thought. So I tried to get the complete thought within that one clip, but
yeah,
kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting. I'm not surprised that Pete in his college years was a little woo-woo.
Right?
That doesn't shock you, me.
Right? Yeah.
No.
So it goes on to, you know, even after his NFL career, and he was looking to go back to college before he landed at USC, it still sounded like he was into this idea of sports performance on a little bit different level, and you probably won't be surprised that much by this either.
He did this pitch to Stanford University for their sports division. And basically what he pitched to them was a amalgamation of all the Russian psychic abilities in sports, mm-hmm. all the American attempts at it, and the Esalen Institute sports kind of program.
It's like a critical analysis of all the best parts.
He joined it all together and he pitched it to Stanford. You know, stuff like training athletes in meditation every day. They'll basically be like monks, but athlete monks. And Stanford was about to sign off on it when he got offered a job to be head coach of USC.
Athlete monks?
Athlete monks.
Yeah, is that like warrior poet? Same sort of deal?
A little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, is it any coincidence that the quarterback that has brought him the most success in his career is basically a athlete monk?
Yeah, pretty much. And that's it's kind of where they end up going with this. They further the discussion, and it kind of it gets a little bit interesting when they because they start talking about well, we'll get into it here with a clip, because the Virginia Mason Athletic Center, built about the same time that Pete Carroll came around to the Seahawks. I don't know if it was coincidental, but they seem to believe it was a little bit more than coincidental by just the tone of this next clip.
And this new facility all of a sudden got built as soon as he was the head coach, called the VMAC, or the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. And it's where the Seahawks today will do all the stuff you'd expect, like they lift weights, they run drills, they do the football stuff, right? But they also do crazy Esalen stuff there. Like, they'll do visualizations, they'll do meditation, they have sports psychologists, they have all this stuff, which, especially for the time, was pretty weird. So he had actually done it. He had rolled out, kind of in a covert way,
in a roundabout way,
this psychic training facility for the Seattle Seahawks.
But and how well did the Seattle Seahawks do? Because I haven't.
They
really
went on to win the 2013 Super Bowl. They were back in the Super Bowl in 2014 where they lost.
Interesting.
Incredible turnaround. Like, he actually turned the team around, rebuilt the team from the ground up. And from what we hear from the players, the way that they train for the Seahawks is different to anywhere else in the NFL.
Now, I can't really do the episode justice, because they talk about all the other things that all the different athletic training of that's even more, I guess,
outside of the box.
Right. You know, because well, the other conversations that they get into with the podcast is the idea of the military and creating super soldiers, and tying in the fact that Pete Carroll has had discussions. You know, a lot of times you hear him talk about meeting with Navy SEALs and meeting with people in the military. And so they're kind of bringing that into the discussion, too. And it's still above, I think, what other teams do in the terms of, you know, athlete visualization and, you know, trying to be positive rather than negative, and just some of those things that go into it. But it was a fun listen to kind of get a perspective of it, of just how, especially that first clip where it came from of talking about Pete and his University of the Pacific days.
Yeah. And it is all tied together with Pete, and it makes sense. I mean, with his focus on the mental side of things and his positive outlook and approach. And yeah, I mean, it's kind of hippy dippy. It is. And would be surprised if the majority of the roster is not required to eat some mushrooms at least once a year.
Well, they do. You know, the one other part that I didn't clip was how he talked about them doing guided meditation with Michael Gervais.
Yeah. Yep. With Gervais. And that, so I would think, I mean, guided meditation, I mean, you know, you drink the quote unquote Kool-Aid
or eat the quote unquote mushroom.
Exactly. And you have a different experience and open up your mind, right?
I want to know more.
I wouldn't be stunned. Does the league, the new drug policy, I mean, or even the old one, I mean, was mushrooms something that they tested for? Or is it basically just like weed and coke and meth?
You think Pete gets around the whole mushroom policy?
If there is one, I don't know.
Because Phil Jackson was kind of in this mold, right? He was probably did it before even Pete came along. And look at what he did with the Chicago Bulls and then with the LA Lakers.
And when Steve Kerr then became a coach, a former Phil Jackson disciple, right. I mean, you see him employing some of Pete's techniques and things of that nature as well. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to listen to the Kerr and Carroll podcast. That will be interesting, because I like Steve Kerr. He's a very fascinating guy, and you know, maybe he could bring a little more out of Pete that I haven't heard before, and that'll be cool. But one thing, I did see a photo of them standing next to each other, and every time I see an NBA player stand next to like a football guy of some kind, it's a stark reminder how freaking tall every single NBA player is.
Yeah.
'Cause Steve Kerr was not that big in the NBA. But he towers over Pete Carroll.
Right.
And who's not a little guy.
Oh, that was the other thing that they get into, too, with regard to the NBA. It was at the end of the show, and apparently they get into some really fun stuff at the end of the show, and then they put the rest behind the paywall, so I didn't get to listen to it. But it was essentially how Zion Williamson is like getting robot parts in his body to become like an ultra athlete.
Interesting. That will definitely segue into my do better when the time comes. But yeah, I mean, in a way, if you think about it, with the medical technology advancing as it has, I mean, these guys are kind of rebuilt like the Bionic Man, right? I mean, you have pitchers now like trying to blow out their elbow to get Tommy John sooner.
Sure.
Because you
get it out of the way.
Some guys, they get some increased velocity out of doing that when it's all said and done. So yeah, it is interesting. I mean, just look at, we mentioned Adrian Peterson earlier in the podcast, tears out his ACL, has surgery, and is back in what, like, what was it, 5 months, 6 months?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And
as good as ever. I mean, it really is incredible. So yeah, maybe there are cyborg athletes out there. I don't know. I don't know why Zion Williamson is the one that they choose for that, but okay.
Maybe just because he's the most current guy. Who knows? I did not spring for the paywall version.
Okay. Well, maybe Zion Williamson is like the T2 to LeBron's, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger original Terminator.
There you go.
Because if I had to pick a player that I thought was a robot in the NBA, like with bionic capabilities, it would be LeBron. And it would be because of his durability. He never gets hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, he's gotten a little hurt over the last year or two, but he's also, you know, he's outlast the warranty on the car, right?
Right.
he's an older player. And even a cyborg, you know, joints wear out. Need some new bearings.
And going back to the conversation, yeah, it doesn't shock me that, you know, because you can only be in the gym so much and lift so many weights to get that kind of strength. I feel like Pete has touched on this capacity to where people can grow on the mental side, and that maybe that's a place where not a lot of teams are working on that part of it, and that can be where you end up having the edge ultimately when other teams are focused on other things.
Well, they believe in it. There's no doubt about that, whether it's Dr. Gervais or even Russ talking about, I mean, how often have you heard him talk about the neutral mind stuff?
Yeah, Trevor Moad.
Yeah. In all of that, I mean, they really do believe in the ability to unlock an extra bit of potential,
mm-hmm.
as far as performance goes, by having an uncluttered mind. And I'm sure there's something to that.
Have you listened to any of the Trevor Moad interviews on the neutral mind?
No.
Oh, it's interesting.
Is it?
It's well. It's,
is he an interesting speaker?
Yeah. He's a more eloquent Luke Wilson.
Oh. Okay.
I think. Yeah,
I had no idea. All right.
Yeah,
did Luke Wilson like mention him in that hangout too, that he didn't like him?
Did he?
I don't know. Something like that. Oh, that he didn't know. Think that Moab liked him.
No, I
don't. I don't know. He said he had met one dude that they mutually knew, and he's like, I don't think he liked me. And Greg Olson was like, no. He digs it. It's fine.
Yeah. It's interesting in that trying to, you know, you don't have to be positive all the time. And I think that was my big takeaway with the Trevor Moab talk is that the opposite of being negative, obviously, is being positive, but you don't have to be the positive guy. You just have to decide not to be negative.
Right.
And so to find the neutral. And I like that perspective.
Turns out not everything is epic all the time.
And if you can operate in the, okay, just avoid the negative thoughts, you'll be better off because you can operate between neutral and positive.
Yeah. And then if you want to be, you know, in positive zone, then I guess you can.
But don't force me.
Whereas I store up all my negative thoughts about the world and then, you know, wait for 2 weeks. And then before we get on, I give you an hour of like how frustrated I am.
Yeah. Well, and then we can get it out and you don't have to bring it to the show. And it's good.
Right.
It's a good time.
It is a good time. Yeah. Because I don't know many other people in the radical middle, man.
I'm telling you, we could almost turn it into a podcast, but I can guarantee there's a lot of people that wouldn't like it.
maybe.
Well, some people that do like this show and have gone to either gettintheflock.com or seahawkerspodcast.com/support. Start off with a one-time donation via PayPal from Leon Refleur, who dropped a $15 bill in the bucket to support the show. So welcome to the flock, and thanks to Leon.
Yeah, man, appreciate that. Yeah, the name Leon, near and dear to my heart. And I'm not saying this to disparage Leon, but like my first dog was named Leon. Mm. It was an old German shepherd that the neighbor had to go to the old folks' home. And like, so we took him in. Awesome dog, man. Like, he was amazing. He would look both ways before crossing the street. Saved me from a pack of Dobermans once.
Yeah.
Like, he was a cool dog. Yeah. Hey, so I'm fond of Leon.
I like it. Lee Rydberg also came in at getintheflock.com at $3. So welcome to the flock to Lee.
Hey, welcome, man. Apparently, things are going just fine for Lee through the Virageddon here.
I hope so.
Yeah.
So once again, if you want to help support the show, you can go to getintheflock.com. We also had a group of 40 people go to tinypiecesofseahawkstuff.com. And before the show, we recorded the selection of the winner thanks to Siri and the random number generator. And it turned out that Craig Humphrey was one of our members of the flock who came away with the tiny piece of Seahawk stuff, the Russell Wilson Obsidian Galaxy Gear card, with a tiny piece of the away jersey, the white jersey in there.
Yeah, very cool. Only bummer there is you got to send it all the way to England right now. That's a long way.
That's not that for a card. Those are easy to send overseas.
Oh, they are.
Oh yeah, they're not even that expensive. A little more expensive, but not that much.
I know Craig certainly deserves it. So congratulations to Craig.
And so for the next tiny piece of Seahawk stuff giveaway, I'm going with the Topps card, Adam.
Mm.
Because you were frustrated by the fact
You mean a real sports card? Not whatever that obsidian hourglass shaped thing was that's clearly a counterfeit that you cooked up in your own garage.
Yeah. This is a rectangle card. It's shaped like a card's supposed to be. And it's
with a name called Topps or Score or like, you know, one of the actual sports cards makers.
Yeah.
Production
and
people.
I think this is actually from Russell Wilson's. Yeah, this is a rookie card season for Russell Wilson. Mm-hmm. And so 2012 Russell Wilson and contains a tiny piece of the blue jersey this time.
Ooh, I like it.
So tiny pieces of Seahawksstuff.com. Go there, comment, go Hawks. And we'll pick another winner here by the end of the month.
Hey, you know, I like it. It gives us something to do.
Yeah.
Good for you.
All right, we got an email to answer before we get into Do Better and Better at Life from Charlie Malmberg. Says, hi there, my little Potters. A very grateful, longtime listener and even longer time Hawk fan from Stockholm, Sweden here. I'm a big fan of your pod, which serves as a balm for my scarred Hawk soul. When life gives me lemons, I listen to your podcast instead.
No, you're supposed to kick life in the balls and demand it gives you bacon.
Yeah, a throwback to the old intro.
Yeah.
Here's my two cents on the current Seahawks and a couple of speculative questions. What else is there in the offseason? And finally, an impossible request.
Well, we'll see about that.
On drafting defensive ends, Carlos Dunlap, Max Crosby. That's the entire list of defensive ends drafted after the 27th pick with 9 or more sacks in their rookie season in the last 10 years. Then you have a couple of decent producers in Yannick Ngakoue and Bruce Irvin just below that number. My point is that to get year one production, you have to be seriously lucky. So my question is, do you think that the development of Green, Collier, with Irvin and Mayoa, plus the dark horses Nas and Christmas, can be enough to make us better? Or do we live or die with Clowney or a rookie? For no reason, here's my favorite stat of the draft. Since 1990. 17 quarterbacks have been drafted first overall, but the only ones who have won a Super Bowl for that team that drafted them are both named Manning. Here's a conversation I believe happened 3 years ago. General Manager John Schneider. Hey, brother. We're really psyched about what you've done for us so far. Coach Carroll. Fired up! Coordinator Chris Richard. Thank you, guys. I really love it here. John Schneider. Thing is, we're going to blow it up. Pete Carroll. Makes explosion sound. Chris Richard. The Legion? John Schneider, yep, but we're still looking at you for coach's replacement. Pete Carroll, not anytime soon, you understand. John Schneider, we just need you to experience something else other than the Seahawks way first. Chris Richard, so instead of promoted, I'm fired? Pete Carroll, explosion sound. The debate for you, does John have a replacement for Pete in mind already? Is it Chris Richard or maybe someone else on the staff? How far off is it? Personally, I would gladly have the Pete Carroll era go on into his 90s after suffering through the 80s and 90s. Now, the impossible request. I would love to have you guys record a commentary track to a classic Seahawks game. I know, it's improbable, but a little flocker can dream. From Charlie.
Yeah, I like it, Charlie. Now, here's the thing. That is literally not impossible, but it's probably more unlikely that that happens. I mean, maybe we will.
Yeah.
I don't know. You see a lot of people doing this thing. I mean, I know Bill Simmons at The Ringer, they do their rewatchable stuff, right? And they've been going back over old games and breaking them down. Have you gotten into any of that at all?
I've seen it. They also do it for movies.
Yeah. Oh, I know. The thing is, I can't get into it at all.
No.
Like, are people like rewatching old games like on NFL Network?
Well, here's what I could see. The tough thing about this. So if we were to do a game, just say the Super Bowl win for the Seahawks.
Yeah.
That would be a game where we could do it. Would it be all that great considering it's a blowout? I don't know. But if we are going to do it right, I feel like it would take a lot of preparation to know when the plays were coming. So that way we could really plan it out during the game. Now, could you and I just watch the game and comment on it, you know, like Mystery Science Theater style?
Yeah, but I think that's how you do that.
You could do it that way. I think the more planning, the better, the more work that you put into it, the better it would sound.
Of course you think that.
But that would be. I'm like, but hey, that would make it more likely. Game.
Let's just turn on the game and wing it. I mean, what do we got? There's no separation and preparation here.
Okay. Well, if that's the case, if we just put it on and wing it, I do think it would be more likely that we could do it.
Yeah. I think what we do is we do that. We sit down with a couple beers and we watch the game. And yeah, I think that'd be fun. Because there's so much that you forget.
Yeah, I think so. You know what we don't forget is just how impactful that Cam Chancellor was in that game and how he deserved to be the Super Bowl MVP.
Right. But, yeah, when he depleted Demaryius Thomas. But yeah, as far as Pete's replacement, I don't know that John has that queued up. I mean, I'm sure he's got guys in mind that he'd want to tap, you know, guys that he can work well with. I don't see that happening for another 2 years. I bet you we have at least two more seasons of Pete.
The idea, too, that it was in the planning phase of letting Chris Richard go to another team and blowing up the Legion of Boom. Again, I think it's unlikely, but I do. I like the thought of it.
Yeah, I don't like the thought of a Chris Richard head coaching situation. I'm not excited about that.
Well, you got to give it time.
He was an okay coordinator here, and he was a mediocre coordinator in Dallas. And
Pete hasn't done well with the coordinators as guys who are upward coach candidates so much.
Well, I mean, Yeah, I'd say Dan Quinn wasn't terrible. And honestly,
Gus Bradley
down in Jacksonville, I mean, they just gave up on him a year early.
Right.
He had to go in the right
That's
direction.
True, because it was his team that he put together that they ended up taking to the Super Bowl. Or not to, well, to the AFC to. Championship.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was building it. It was there. And so,
and what is it? And what has happened since he left? It has all gone downhill for Jacksonville.
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah. Now they have a guy as a starting quarterback who does Tiger King posts, basically, like, you know, poses with a jaguar and parodies. There it is, Tiger King parody there photos. Yeah.
Well, and then going back to maybe the more serious question of the bunch with the drafting defensive ends. And that's what, you know, go back to our conversation earlier on in the show, too. The idea of you landing an impact defensive end is very slim because, yes, that if a guy is expected to have production in the NFL, you either have the amount of depth that a guy ends up sliding, or you have to get really lucky. And there really isn't the kind of depth to where you look at a guy and you go and you see a player who's going to get any more than 6 or 7 sacks next season. And it would be, I would feel awfully good getting that kind of production based off of this year's draft class.
Yeah, I think defensive end is one of those positions that just historically, year in, year out, even not even talking about production the first year, but like great production throughout a career, those guys go in the top 3. They just do.
Mm-hmm.
And I obviously we're not going to be anywhere near that this year.
Or top 10. I mean, on a good class, you see guys still in the top 10, but yeah, I think we're fortunate that we're not drafting in the top 10 regularly.
So one guy we didn't talk about was Benson Mayoa being re-signed. Like, did that move the needle for you at all?
Not really. I think he's another guy.
Yeah, I didn't realize he had 6 or 7 sacks last year or something like that.
And it was limited time that he had his 6 or 7 sacks. So
I was like, okay.
Sure.
So now they just need Mike B. And like, who else is out there from the Super Bowl team that's an active player?
Not too many active players.
So they went and they got Bruce.
There is one other player that I'm thinking of that's out there that they could go in and get. The defensive tackle who played for Tampa Bay.
Gerald McCoy?
No, that played for the Seahawks that year.
Who's on Tampa's roster?
I don't think he's actually with Tampa anymore. Clinton McDonald.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You confused me with that one. I did not understand where you were going with that. Now I got you.
Well, he was in Tampa, then he went to Oakland and Arizona last year. Didn't do anything with Arizona last year.
No way.
You really want to get everybody from 2013 back together.
I mean, I'm not doing it. John's doing it.
Mebane retired, though. Maybe talk him out of retirement. He just announced his retirement, so it's not like he's been retired. Anybody else from 2013 you go out and get?
Can we get Doug Baldwin out of retirement?
I'd like that.
I think that would work.
Sure. Yeah. Well, before we get on to Do Better and Better at Life, we got a review. And not just a review, Adam. A review solely in emoji form. I didn't even know this was possible.
Oh, no. Use your words.
From German Seahawks Love, the username in the Germany iTunes App Store. And it's an okay hand sign.
Okay.
And it's and then in the review comments, it's okay hand sign, blue circle, green circle, blue circle. Another okay hand sign.
What's the circles?
Well, I think just blue and green for Seahawks colors.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. All right. Yeah. You can see I'm really up with the emoji speak. I'm good at it.
So thanks for the review.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. I mean, I figured there'd be an eggplant somewhere in there. I don't know.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if it's from Cora.
Oh, maybe.
I know she listens from Germany. I think, yeah. And kind of, you know, digging at you with the emojis.
Yeah, people do that.
And now I want to know who put in that review.
I pretty much cured you of sending me emoji texts for the most part.
Pretty much. I'll throw the thumbs up at you.
That's fine. that's a legit just, hey, cool. Yep. Gotcha. Like, that's great. Yeah. But if I have to pretend I'm back in ancient Egypt and decipher catfish hieroglyph, not into it.
What do you say we get on to some Do Better and Better at Life?
All right, my Do Better this week, Brandon, is for the United States Air Force.
Uh-oh.
That could be dangerous, but...
You don't want to get on their bad side. I think they own drones.
Well, that's funny you bring that up, because this kind of all ties right into that direction. So... You know, as I'm sitting here through Virageddon and just being like, oh, okay, well, it looks like, you know, we're kind of getting through this and maybe getting closer to the backside of things and all that. And, you know, can't wait to go back to normal and football's restarting and life, you know, continuing on the planet. I get to read a headline that starts with this. America wants its robot warrior, XQ-58A Valkyrie, to fight alongside the F-35. Say, well, okay, that's a lot of jargon there. Like, wait, is that really that big of a deal? Right, well, let me tell you a little bit about the XQ-58A Valkyrie program, which is basically an autonomous drone powered by AI.
Uh-oh.
That goes into battle with other manned aircraft, or maybe just into battle as a swarm of AI fighter jets, right? You know what they call the project? This is the part.
Skynet?
Skyborg. They call it Skyborg. You are just inviting this thing to turn on us and become our robot overlords and wipe us all off the freaking planet. You can't hide from Skyborg as it buzzes around the sky. unleashing hellfire missiles on humanity.
So they combined the Borg from Star Trek and Skynet from Terminator and combined it into one word and thought, hey, I got a great idea for this program.
We're going to call it Skyborg. I mean, that is tempting fate, man. And I just, you know how the AI, like, robots, like, freaked me out a little bit to begin with?
Yeah.
Like, remember the police dog thing that was terrifying? That
it, I remember. It haunts my nightmares.
Yeah, that's going to be the ground troops. Now we got Skyborg in the air about to be introduced. They're, like, 6 months away from this. So the U.S. Air Force, for tempting fate, and watch a Terminator movie, for Christ's sake. Do better.
Okay, this is an opportunity for audience input here. Are there any two more terrifying things from movies that you could combine into one term more than Skynet and the Borg from Star Trek?
Okay.
Like maybe if you put Vader in the program name?
Yeah, like Predator and Darth Vader combined somehow.
Yeah. The Darth Predator program.
Yeah, something like that's not good.
No.
Yeah, we'll come up. Yeah, we'll think on that one.
This is something. I think this is audience participation here.
Yeah, but Skyborg is up there, dude. Like that's
the brevity of it too is brilliant, in a bad way.
It's a really bad way, man. Do you trust the program Skyborg, Brandon? Do you trust in that?
No. As soon as I hear it, I inherently know that I'm out. This is a bad idea.
Yeah. No, bad. It is bad idea.
They need to take a page from our legislators and who name bills that things that, you know, give them nice names that end up doing like the Patriot Act.
Right. Right. Something that's relatively heinous. And
like,
then
yeah, I'm a patriot. That, I think I would like this bill.
Yeah, I'm for it. Like patriotism. Yeah.
So yeah. Why are they like Patriot missiles?
So I don't know. Should they call it like an ice cream drone? Like it's something that everybody can get behind. Like who hates ice cream?
Cashew ice cream is delicious, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I'd be with you on that because I'm a pistachio ice cream fan.
Cashew milk ice cream.
It
works for us lactose intolerant people.
The ice cream plants will be the first thing that Skyborg bombs. When it turns on us.
I know. Oh, well, you know what? They might be able to take out some of these people who came up with our NFL 2010s all-decade team. Because for the most part, I'm pretty happy with this all-decade team. But there's some people I'm not happy with.
Really?
Well, okay. For anybody who hasn't seen the all-decade team, we'll just run down the list real quick. On offense, Brady Rodgers, quarterbacks. Okay, fine. You got two people who won the most MVPs in the last decade. Kind of makes sense. Running backs, you got a Seahawks running back in there with Marshawn Lynch. He's joined by Frank Gore, LeSean McCoy, Adrian Peterson. Top four guys. Got a Seahawk in there. Sounds good. Wide receivers, Antonio Brown, Larry Fitzgerald, Calvin Johnson, Julio Jones. We got Darren Sproles in here on the offense as a flex guy.
Okay. Yeah.
Tight ends, Gronk, Kelsey.
Yeah, hard to argue with that.
Offensive line, tough to argue with. Hey, Jari Evans, legendary Seahawk in there at guard.
Okay.
He just rolls right over you there.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, I know how you do. All right. I'm not responding to it anymore.
Jason Peters, Tyron Smith, Joe Staley, Joe Thomas at the tackles, Logan Mankin, Zach Martin joining Jari Evans, Marshall Yanda, and then centers Alex Mack, Marquise Pouncey. Okay. Defense, the defensive ends, Calais Campbell, Cameron Jordan, Julius Peppers, J.J. Watt. Defensive tackles, Geno Atkins, Fletcher Cox, Aaron Donald, and Ndamukong Suh. Can I argue? Aaron Donald, unanimous selection along with J.J. Watt at defensive end.
Yeah, all right. Yeah.
Linebackers, got Bobby Wagner in there with Luke Kuechly, Khalil Mack, Chandler Jones, Von Miller, Patrick Willis. I know Chandler Jones causes you a little bit of heartburn there, Adam.
Who really thinks he's a premier player?
He's got the sack numbers.
In obscurity. Nobody cares. He's never been a guy who really tilts the field.
Yeah.
He's a stat producer. That's great. Yeah, I don't know about that one.
For all the linebackers that they picked three corners, which Patrick Peterson, Darrell Revis, Richard Sherman. So got another Seahawk there. LOB member.
Mm-hmm.
Got another LOB member on the back end at the safeties, Eric Berry, Earl Thomas, Eric Weddle.
What?
Yeah. Eric Weddle.
Eric Weddle.
Yeah, the Eric Weddle.
Is this both free and strong safety?
Yeah, they combined them. Well, and then they have defensive backs where they put Chris Harris and Tyron Matthew. So Matthew also a safety.
Yeah, they kind of looked at him more as a nickel guy as well as Harris, I think was the idea there. You're telling me that Eric freaking Weddle made the safety list before Cam Chancellor did?
Yeah, and that's kind of the direction my do better is going, but it gets worse. Nick Shook of Around the NFL, one of their writers, he wrote the list of the 2010s all-decade team snubs. 10 NFL players worthy of being on the list who we didn't mention. Guys like Drew Brees, A.J. Green at receiver, Terrell Suggs as an edge player. Oh, Pete Carroll and so for coaches, it was Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick. Makes a lot of sense. Andy Reid listed as a snub, which, okay. I can see him being the third guy, but never won a Super Bowl in the last decade until this current decade. So,
yeah, I guess technically it was in 2020 when they won that, huh?
And then the last time he went to the Super Bowl was 2005.
Yeah.
Or the 2005 season.
But yeah, clearly the two best coaches and the two best cultures over the 2010s, you know, Pete and Bill.
So let's finish off this list of snubs. Cameron Wake, edge. DeMarcus Ware, edge. T.Y. Hilton as a snub. Dez Bryant as a snub at receiver. Andrew Whitworth on the offensive line. And Jason Witten as the tight end. Of the top 10 list of snubs, Cam Chancellor of the Seahawks doesn't even make the snub list. Nick Shook, you're snubbing. I need to make a list, and it would start with number one of the players who got snubbed from the list of snubbed who actually should have been on the all-decade team. Not even the list of snubs. Nick Shook, do better.
Yeah, man. Couldn't agree with you more. I mean, there wasn't a guy who scared more NFL players than Cam Chancellor. Like, I mean, the boom part of the Legion of Boom was Bam Bam Cam.
Yeah. Cam Chancellor, who, I mean, was he maybe the best player on the Legion of Boom? You could make the argument.
Boy.
And it's not like you could, and that's not like you can say with Cam, okay, he had injury issues, so that's what kept him off the list. He played for 7 of the 10 season within the decade.
And was Cam the whole time.
Eric Berry, if he got off the list, you could say injury issues.
Yeah, well, an illness, right?
Yeah.
No, Eric Weddle's the guy who needs to go. Like, were they basing this on beards? Like, what?
He has stats. He's a stat guy.
Ugh.
A lot like Chandler Jones.
Yeah. Overrated.
The fact that he wasn't even on the list of snubs, that's bad. To overlook a guy like Cam when you're coming up with your list of snubs that you put T.Y. Hilton on.
Right. All right, man. Yeah, that's a major, major oversight. I mean, Cam Chancellor's not even in tier two.
I'm waiting for the apology, Nick.
Yeah.
You need a Cam Chancellor feature on how he was snubbed from your snub list before I will scrub you from the Do Better archives of our podcast.
Yeah.
On to Better at Life.
All right, man. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for at least one time listener and lieutenant governor of the great state of Washington, Cyrus Habib.
He's more than a one time listener. He's been with the show for a while, at least before he got selected as lieutenant governor. I don't know. Right, I haven't heard from him in a little while.
Yeah, I just don't know if he's still listening.
I'm guessing he's kind of getting it.
Yeah, exactly. He's had things on his plate. So lieutenant governor of Washington. A man who listened to the show, at least used to, so that was cool. So it felt like we had connections of power.
When he was a state senator.
So anyways, he recently made a decision about his professional future. And I mean, this is a guy who went to Columbia University. Mm-hmm. He was a Rhodes Scholar. He had a Rhodes Scholarship. He graduated from Yale Law. Oh, and did I mention he did it all while blind?
Right.
Right? He said, from Braille to Yale. Is how he put it.
Nice.
One of the absolute rising stars in politics recently decided that he's going to make a change at the end of this term as lieutenant governor. And this is what spurred the change. He said, quote, I was in talks with a top literary agent in New York about a book deal. It was all predicated on my biography, my identity. He could feel himself being sucked into a celebrity culture in American politics that had nothing to do with public service. He could feel himself being swallowed by pride. How many ways can you be called a rising star? He asked.
Mm.
And so, with that realization that he was becoming a little too big for his own britches and could, fly a little too high to the sun, decided he's going to give it all up at the end of this term and become a Catholic priest.
Very cool.
That's what he's doing. He's going to take the next 10 years of his life and devote himself to that. And he feels he can do more good for the world that way. And in an era where I am absolutely sick and tired of all of the freaking stupid ass politicians, every single last one of them, good for a man with the type of intelligence and sanity that Cyrus has to get the hell out of that and into something better. So Cyrus would be better at life than Skip Bayless.
You know, the sad thing is we need the people who have the sense to get out of it.
To stay in it?
To stay in it sometimes.
Yeah. Well,
and so it's hard to find that balance, but it is tough to watch politicians, especially when they're more politically motivated than better of the country motivated.
Yeah.
And you can get the sense that he's more for the betterment of people if he's looking to take that route. And yeah, always maybe what drove this decision, Adam, is that he got to thinking, gosh, you know, this is pretty tough work being lieutenant governor. I haven't been able to listen to an episode of the Seahawkers podcast in a while.
Right.
Now we're going to get Cyrus back.
Yeah. Well, if he ever left, I don't know. He might still listen.
Maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
we haven't heard from you, Cyrus.
Might have other voices that are more important to listen to if he goes to be a priest.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't know. This can be a religious experience for folks.
I hope not.
Maybe not. Well, my better at life this week is for Niraj Sehgal. And he's a professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. And one of the things that he came out here recently with was some scientific backing around this idea that we're all better off by the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs won the Super Bowl over the San Francisco 49ers.
That feels right.
I know it feels right just in my soul.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have a little bit of scientific evidence to back it up, because one of the things that Tucker Franklin points out in his article on Sports Illustrated is he talked to Dr. Sehgal, this professor of medicine, and said that based on when the Super Bowl happened, if the 49ers would have won the Super Bowl,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and they would have come back and done a parade in San Francisco around the time that it would have been, it could have potentially increased the spread of the coronavirus and COVID-19.
Yeah.
And that could have been devastating, not just for the San Francisco area, but for all the people that went there and then flew back and all the people traveling through that area, and could have dispersed the disease even farther. So I'm looking at this now. You know, I've always thought that the world is a better place because the 49ers lost to the Chiefs in Super Bowl 54. I've known it in my heart. But now, science and the medical community is backing up what I've always believed to be true. So whether or not it's an excuse to help make Niners fans feel better, or if really the entire planet is better off because the 49ers lost the Super Bowl, I'm going to choose the latter. And for Niraj Sehgal, professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco, having the credentials to back up this kind of assertion, he is better at life than Skip Bayless.
There you have it, folks. Science that proves that hanging around San Francisco 49ers or their fans,
mm-hmm,
will make you sick.
There it is.
There it is. They're disease-ridden.
But it does make me wonder, Adam, if you're Jimmy Garoppolo, is your new pickup line how you made the world a better place by overthrowing Emmanuel Sanders?
I think if you're Jimmy Garoppolo, you shut the hell up. You just smile and never mention that you're mediocre at throwing a football to anyone.
Just go off the looks.
Just go off the looks, Jimmy. It's worked for him up to this point.
Jimmy Garoppolo, making the world a better place. And you know who else is making the world a better place? Our supporters at $12 and above, Adam. We haven't thanked him after the show for a little bit now. So let's close out the show thanking our $12 supporters and above.
Keith Kedover, a.k.a. Floctimus Prime, University of Cybertron, Little Flockers, roll out.
DCH from Sparks, Nevada, the University of Montana Grizzlies.
Annalisa Mickelson, a.k.a. Mrs. Doug Baldwin, New York, New York, undergrad, University of North Carolina, Greensboro, graduate school, Brooklyn College.
Eric Trench, rooting for the Seahawks out of Renton, Washington, graduated from Eastern Washington University.
Gary Blum from Chappaqua, New York and the University of Pennsylvania, your 2016 Pick'em League champion.
Ron Pepper, UNLV Runnin' Rebels, San Francisco, California.
Hong Kong!
Ah!
Hong Kong!
Ah!
Hong Kong!
Ah!
Kevin Stengem, Keene, Texas.
Ella Esparza, Woodway, Texas, Yale University, and Sam Houston State, Eat 'em Up Cats.
Lisa in Seattle.
Vincent Parker, Emily Carr, University of Art Design, RN Collective.
Samuel Gelber, NoHo, California.
David Van Cleve, Camas, Washington, home of the Papermakers.
Leo Jose, Luleå, Sweden, from Luleå Eskimos and Vancouver, France.
Paul from San Diego.
Hector Delgadillo from Los Angeles, California.
Jameson Holman from Murray, Utah, representing Mississippi State University. Hail State and go Hawks.
Hey Seahawkers, my name is Garen Taylor. I live in one of the most beautiful places in the world, North Idaho. Hashtag on the rose. Go Hawks.
And continuing on down the list, we have Christina in Manassas, Virginia, Ross in Eureka, California, James in Linwood, Roe in Federal Way, Sven in Berlin, Deutschland, Young in Anchorage, Becca in Manhattan Beach, Tim in Austin, Jared in Missoula, Kathy in Eureka, Joshua in Seven Oaks, England, Brandon in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Christian in Bergen, Norway, Jonathan in Ridgefield, Thomas in the Bronx, Mitchell in Roseville, California, Keegan in Colorado Springs, Pepper in Greenville, South Carolina, Paul in Minneapolis, Seth in Tacoma, Owen in Ashburn, Ireland, Jeffrey in Kansas City, Kari in Rochester, Brian in Berlin, Connecticut, Connie in Gothenburg, Sweden, Eric in Seattle, Taylor in South Cle Elum, Tracy in Kaneohe, Hawaii, Dean in the Greater Hawkdom, JC in Billericay, UK, Lisa in Kelowna, BC, Marvin in Riverdale, Utah, Scott in Bakersfield, California, Crystal in Oldsmar, Florida, Eric in Clovis, California, Chris in Spokane, Kevin in Sammamish, Bryson in Eltopia, John in the Greater Hawkdom, Shannon in Florida, Shoko in New York, Jeremy in the Bronx, Greg in Seattle, Ryan in Chatham, Kent, Ben in Wrexham, Wales, Joshua in Cander, New York, Kenneth in Hutto, Texas, DK in the Greater Hawkdom, Mario in Pullman, Paul in Boston, Jeremy in Moses Lake, Cora in Ditterst, Deutschland, Jeff in Monroe, Warren in Dundee, Oregon, Chris in Austin, Amy in Squim, Marcus in Potts Point, Australia, Ben in the Greater Hawkdom, Preston in Phoenix, and Nathan in Bozeman, Montana. Once again, just our biggest thanks to those of you who continue to support the show, especially those of you at the $12 level and above, keeping us going through the off season and into the 2020 season.
Yeah, I believe in Pete Carroll, Woo Woo Magic, and I think that season's going to happen. And I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.